You're listening to your NBA podcast with Larry O'Brien. Kane, the Warriors are NBA champions! But let's not bury the lead. Is it time to trade Jason Tatum and rebuild around Robert Williams? Go.
Good. Actually, I think the more pressing issue is our podcast name. I just want to...
What's our name?
No, I'm thinking maybe we can let Mr. Larry O'Brien finally retire. He's had a long career, you know, as commissioner, and he's had COVID and all these things. So I think maybe we should just let him rest and start forcing him to join the podcast. We can tweak it in off-season. That's what the off-season is for. It's for improvements.
It's for improvements.
I'll go back to your question. Jason Tatum, should he be traded? You know, actually, I thought he would... I mean, it's obvious, but I thought he'd be better. Like, he had, like, one of the most historic postseason runs. He's already had, like, one of the more historic starts to his career. Just having the multiple magical playoff runs, getting to the NBA Conference Finals Game 7 against LeBron James in his rookie year, and being the big-time player then. It would just seem like he would translate against a Warriors team that was... slightly older, maybe slightly more fatigued, not like kind of a little bit banged up, had, you know, this kind of weird mixture of veterans and young players. And that this Celtics team that had, like we keep saying, had this amazing Eastern Conference run where they swept the Nets, they beat the Bucks in seven, they beat the number one seed Heat in seven, and here they are, and they were up 2-1. And even when they lost the fourth game four, which is probably the turning point of the series, but even when they lost 2-2, they were walking off the court. And I was like pretty sure when we recorded last time, I was like pretty sure that they might go away like winning in six, because they didn't look as tired as the Warriors were. They didn't look as emotional as it. Like sometimes when you see the team get beat, but like they're in their heads like, we got this. You're like, okay, well, you know, even if they lose another one, like they still got two other chances. And that's kind of where I felt the Celtics were heading to. But I think after the Game 4 win, for some reason, they just lost all confidence. And all of a sudden, like when before, like it was clearly the Celtics were the better team. Now the Warriors like look so much better than the Celtics. And I think part of my optimism why the Celtics were going to be better is because like they basically rested Jason Tatum for four games. And they were 2-2. He didn't do anything in the finals. And then I was thinking, okay, Jason Tatum, your legacy is on the line. I mean, he's still young, he's 23, but like, let's prove, this is time to prove, this is the stage you know, to prove your doubters wrong, like that you deserve to be first team All-NBA, that you deserve to be talked about as like a top five player, like one of the few superstars in the league. And I don't know, what did he end up? He probably had more turnovers than he had points. Like in those two games.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Okay, Kane. I've been talking 30 minutes, and you told me you did not press the record button. Explain what are you doing here? You think you're Jason Tatum?
I'm joking.
Take off your Mamba jersey and put a fucking sock over your head.
I'm joking. Wait. So why were you calling Jason Tatum a sock puppet?
Black Mamba. Scratch that! Jason Tatum is a purple sock puppet!
Well, what does sock puppet mean? I don't understand. I don't understand this insult.
I was really proud to come up with this joke, and it dawned on me that I'm the only one that knows this reference. You know how Kobe Bryant had those, had that whole TV web series? What's that? Muse Cage. His Muse Cage episodes. Right? Talk to a purple sock puppet, which is like a snake.
I don't know why. Yeah, you keep talking about this Muse Cage like productions, like it's well, like wide known knowledge.
It's a disaster. It was a disaster. I'm not sure if you just have no interest in these things, or you know, you're worried. Because I kept telling you, watch this. It's a fucking disaster. It's a train wreck, and you refuse to do it. Is it because you don't want to tarnish your sort of respect and idolization of some of these players?
So wait, so other NBA players that were on that show?
No, it was just Kobe Bryant talking about, like, I don't know, some giving, like, basketball coaching advice.
Yeah.
But it was sort of framed around, like, a children's show. So he talked to this sock puppet.
Okay.
Because you know how Kobe Bryant was in this whole phase where he was coming up with, like, books and basketball shorts, and most of them were really terrible. Even the basketball short that won an Oscar is kind of like, oh, it's like, what is this shit?
Yeah, fair enough.
This is not the Black Mamba, a Colorado rapist that I know. Okay, like, what is this? Should he be making children's show? Is what I was saying.
This is Jason Tame's idol, by the way.
Beyond idol, like, fuck, this is... He was cosplaying as Kobe Bryant during the finals. He was wearing, like, Kobe Bryant jerseys, shirts, and, like, wasn't he wearing, like, Sharping, like, 24 on his forearms and stuff? It was very odd, okay? It was very odd. Wait, I think we got sidetracked. What were we talking about?
So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about the Celtics, and it got all cut off, but we're talking about Jason Tatum, and I'm just saying I still rate him highly as a player, but it sounds like what I was getting as... Sounds like you might be rating him less. Like, his finals performance was so egregious that it's like slipped down your ranking a little bit for Jason Tatum.
I think he's the same as I always thought he was, because, you know, you keep talking about Jason in terms of all NBA, Jason Tatum, like, next superstar.
I mean, he is.
Okay, let's just hold our horses.
Next superstar is subjective, but he definitely is respected in the NBA media circles.
He racked up more turnovers than anyone else in NBA history in this playoff run.
That's not true.
I'm not denying it is true. That's a real stat. No joke. He was averaging like fucking 5 turnovers a
game.
I
don't think it's the most.
He has the most.
In NBA finals?
In a playoff run.
Oh, the entire...
Playoff run. Yeah. Okay. Not in, like, cumulative. Not cumulative, because, you know, this guy wasn't in the playoffs that long.
23 turnovers. It's not the most. Can't be the most.
23 turnovers in 6 games?
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's not the most. I guarantee so.
If you're a player getting 5 turnovers, I'm not sure you're getting minutes anymore.
Okay, just relax. God damn it. Just let me see. You're right. Okay, Jason Tatum is the most playoff turnovers in a single postseason with 95 turnovers this season.
Oh God, Jesus. No,
100 turnovers. I mean, LeBron James at 94. If that helps anything.
Don't put those two together in a sentence, please.
Most turnovers.
Be respectful.
Okay, anyway, go continue with your point.
I'm not denying that Jason Tatum is not one of the best young stars we have in the league, but I think this playoff, he certainly didn't elevate his standings in my eyes. I think in the finals, it was deeply problematic. He did not show up. He got completely shut down by Andrew Wiggins, which I'm not blaming Jason Tatum for necessarily, but I feel like he just took a back row seat to everyone else, to Marcus Smart, to Jaylen Brown. In game 6 of the finals, I mentioned to you that, you know, Brown didn't have a fantastic game, but it felt that he was shooting all his shots. He was emptying the barrel, as LeBron James would like to say. You know, he put it out there. And even though it was in a super efficient game for him, I thought he gave it his all. Whereas Jason Tatum, you know, I watched this game twice now. Jason Tatum was like fucking in the corner trying to hide.
Jason Tatum shrank for 2-point field goal percentage. His 3-point field goal percentage is like pretty good still. But that's the problem that a lot of critics have for Jason Tatum, is that he needs to be more aggressive. He needs to take advantage of his 6'10 frame, his 6'10 physique, his athletic, you know, long, like, broad shoulder body, and just barrel into people and take it into the paint and attack the paint, which he's actually way more effective doing, but he's oftentimes scared. And in the finals, yeah, you're right. Wiggins and, you know, to an extent, Porter bullied him into just taking long range 3-point shots, which he's pretty good at. But what happens is that only shooting threes is only going to get so many points and so many, like, you know, it didn't help, obviously, at the end, because he didn't score enough points. When it came down to 2-point percentage shooting, he was, like, horrendous. He just couldn't get his shot anywhere, like, close. Anytime he would attack the basket, he would just, like, throw it off. Like, he just had no interest in attacking the basket meaningfully and, like, trying to score points. It was, like, either trying to draw a foul or, you know, just flailing his arms in the air, not really doing anything with the ball, like for a 2-point inside, like for a normal field goal. So I don't know.
How many air balls did Andrew Wiggins force Jason Tatum to take? Oh my god,
so many air balls.
It was crazy.
So many air balls. I don't know. But this is why I'm like struggling, because I don't want to put all the blame on Jason. I know he's meant to be the main man for this team, and he'll let a lot of Celtics fans down because he should be the best player. When I could say Al Horford played better than him, Robert Williams played better than him, Marcus Smart played better than him, Jaylen Brown's played better than him. Tatum needs to be better than all of them for the Celtics to stand a chance. But at the same time, I didn't see Marcus Smart dominate. I didn't see Jaylen Brown dominate. Robert Williams has a knee injury. The bench was all this loud mouth talk from Grant Williams and Payne Pritchard hitting every open three, and Derek and all these Derek White lovers saying Derek White is like the best trade in the history of NBA trades.
Jesus Christ, that treasure trove.
What happened to these three guys coming off the bench? To all this talk about the depth and it's about so far what we're proving is the depth is what really is not like about the superstar. Well, it's the superstar that won the NBA Finals. It's Steph Curry that proved that he is by far the best player in the series, and he won it. And I don't know. It's a weird thing where the Celtics were about depth at the end of the day. Like Tatum isn't going to carry the team by himself. This team as a whole, the Celtics team as a whole, defensively is the best in the NBA. And I mean, I don't know. It's a weird, because they did pretty well against the Warriors. They only limited them to 105 or 106 points per game. Like that's pretty low for the Warriors, right?
I mean, look, they lost the last three games, which is problematic.
I know. And Tatum deserves a bulk of that blame because he, went from averages with 30 to 20 points per game.
Look, the series is probably closer than what appears if you just look at the stats in the case of, the Warriors winning the last three games straight. Mm. The series was much more closer than that. At one point, the Celtics were up 2-1, and had they closed game four and go up 3-1, it'd be a totally different conversation, right?
And they should have won game four, too. They let that one slip.
So they let that slip. But, on Tatum, I don't see it, man. And I'm not saying he can't get there. He's very young. He's, 23, 24?
I saw it. All postseason up into the finals, I saw it. I saw him every game. They didn't lose a single back-to-back game. That's impressive for a team that's considered very young.
And I need them to not do that in the finals.
Fair enough.
Not to lose, because this is where they're playing, right? We're playing for the ring, the chip, right?
Yeah.
So that's the finals.
It's a ring, too.
I don't care if he scores 50 in the preseason.
Yeah.
It's not what we're playing for.
I wouldn't call the Eastern Conference Finals the preseason.
Are you sure? Have you seen, Miami?
Yeah, let's just thank whatever God we pray to that Miami was in the finals.
Kyle Lowry spent three games just planking on the ground on the court.
Yeah, and Kyle Lowry is going to be paid another $50 million from the Heat for the next two seasons.
No disrespect. I love Lowry, first of all.
Should we just, what do you want to talk about?
Well, the other thing I want to say about Jason Tatum is, look.
You have a lot of grievance. Just remember, this is the guy that, based on the narrative, is the next up-and-coming star, alongside Luka Doncic and stuff. Well, Luka Doncic is already a superstar. Tatum is the next guy, next man up sort of thing. First team All-NBA. Played 20 good games in the regular season and made first team All-NBA.
We might have some variation of a Kawhi situation here. As Pop says, Kawhi is not a leader. And I think this might apply to Tatum. Because on the court, you watch Tatum and you automatically assume that he's the leader of this team. And I got to tell you, Kane, I've been listening to all the post-game pressers, and I can't imagine Tatum is the leader in the locker room. I mean, his demeanor, this is a little controversial, but I think I'm saying something that's not much of a secret for anyone that's honest with themselves. He sounds a bit dumb. Okay, he's a little bit dim.
What's, have you ever heard Naomi Osaka talk?
Yes, she's also...
Is that a similar... Well, let's say, is it a similar vibe?
This is even worse. Now you're asking me to comment on. Now you're asking me to comment on ethnic female players.
I don't know what ethnic means, but they're all. I'm just trying to get a comparison because I don't watch press conferences like you do. So I'm just trying to gauge where we're at here in terms of intelligence or in terms of engagement with the press conference. So I've heard Naomi Osaka can be quite detached and quite. Aloof in press conferences.
Naomi Osaka is very, I would say, very timid, aloof maybe sometimes, but she comes across as genuine.
Okay.
She doesn't. It's very not weak. I wouldn't even say weak. It doesn't feel like it's not very assertive.
Okay.
Which is kind of surprising for a sports athlete. Because all we hear is about being aggressive. These are the, you know, the common sports terms, being aggressive, asserting yourself, making people feel you. It's all this very masculine projection of power and energy. And she's quite the opposite of that. And she's constantly talking about, she constantly feels, feel like she's about to cry and like break down.
Okay.
And it feels like, you know, we're forcing her to play this game. And I don't understand why the media like kind of portrays her as some sort of hero for being weak-minded. I'm not saying it's wrong to be weak-minded, okay? But it's certain, I'm not going to give you an award for being weak-minded.
I don't think she got an award.
What are you laughing at?
Well, I don't think she got an award. But yeah, the media have been pretty harsh on her.
You know, Simone Biles, like, she withdrew from the Olympics and, like, the headlines were like, this is radical courage. Radical courage? She shrunk. She shrunk under the pressure.
Well, that's what teammates are for. She had teammates to pick up the slack.
So getting back on Jason Tatum, I think Jason Tatum's a little different. So Osaka sounds a bit reserved, but very genuine. Jason Tatum just sounds dumb. By dumb, I mean low IQ individual.
All right.
And I think that might be problematic. In other words, I can't imagine him being the vocal leader in the locker room. So I think he certainly can be the leader in terms of performance on the court, being showing you that he's a leader in terms of his hard work and performance. But being the vocal leader, and I think you do need a vocal leader in the locker room, I think that's more of a Marcus Smart, certainly, and certainly even a Jaylen Brown.
Well, Jaylen Brown is the vice president of the NBAPA.
I believe that. I also listened.
What do you mean believe that he is? It's not a belief, it's a fact.
Okay. Sorry. Hey, leave me alone, okay? I've got mental issues. You know, you floated this idea to me previously that perhaps now it's time to get rid of Marcus Smart. You know, trade him while his value is high. And I think that's actually a really good take. I think that there's lots of value there. But I think we got to be careful because, you know, we can't just unplug the heart and soul of this team and expect Jason Tatum to fill the void is what I guess I'm getting at.
Mm.
He doesn't bring sort of the Celtics DNA, the Celtics brand. He doesn't project that in the locker room necessarily.
Mm.
So you need someone else to do that.
Well, I kind of felt like so Jason Tatum is a great scorer. He needs to be more efficient with volume scoring. But at the end of the day, he's most effective as a basketball player as a scorer, like Jason Tatum is. And when he wasn't scoring in the finals, it kind of took him out of the game. He probably lost all the confidence. He probably wasn't attacking as much as he should have, and maybe he was less vocal in the locker room and not rallying the troops as much as he should have. Marcus Smart probably was always upbeat, way more optimistic, way more assertive with his message, with his teammates, and with Ime, you know, like backing him up. Like Ime looks like a really confident guy, like no matter how down, like you hear the locker room talk to his team before they get out on the court. He's always, you know, aggressive but confident and it's instilling confidence in his team. But you can only do so much as a coach. And you can only do so much as like the third best player on the team in Marcus Smart. And as a guy that is your point guard, as your ball handler, he wasn't getting it done. Like defensively, he was okay. Like this series, like he did what he's an elite perimeter defensive player. Like let's put it that way. But to me, I thought Gary Payton was better defensively than Marcus Smart was, you know, defending. Yeah, and much less controversial as well. Gary Payton just went in, did his job, had some nice dunks, and got out of there, you know? So Marcus Smart obviously is much more pivotal to his team, but he can only do so much and had a lot of turnovers still. And you're right, like, you need someone that can embody that Celtics to take his place. They need someone that is able to still replicate that heart and soul that Marcus Smart brings. And just like Jason Tatum is the scorer for the Celtics, I think Devin Booker was the scorer for the Suns and was the franchise player for the Suns. And they had high hopes for him, but Devin Booker never took the team anywhere beyond the, you know, the YMCA semifinals. Enter Chris Paul. Enter Chris Paul into the chat, into the fray, into the chat, and look where the team, look where Chris Paul took this team to, the NBA Finals. Now, let's get into brass tacks here. A Marcus Smart trade for a Chris Paul trade is probably a little bit lopsided, on the Suns' side, as in, like, the Suns is giving up too little. Like, Chris Paul is 10 years older than... But yes, Chris Paul has a lot of cachet. Marcus Smart has got cachet too. He just won Defensive Player of the Year, which is a high honor. As a perimeter player, first time since Gary Payton the first. So, look, could I interest you in Marcus Smart and a second round pick, perhaps for Chris Paul and a first?
That is a very intriguing trade.
I think the numbers, I mean, you might have to chuck in, like, you know, whatever, a Luke Kornet or like a Nick Stauskas or Daniel Tice, and I don't know what the salary cap situation is, but the meat of the trade is Smart and Chris Paul for, you know, and a couple of draft picks chucking in there.
That would be an all-in move, because with Chris Paul,
it would be
you need
in,
to win.
Because Chris Paul's age, yeah, you need to win, yeah. But Chris Paul would be the heart and soul.
He's on a bigger salary as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you need to chuck in a few role players from the Celtics to make it work. But mostly you're giving up Smart. The Celtics get a first-round pick. They get you get Chris Paul and a first-round pick, basically.
So as you're thinking, is that... Because Chris Paul can bring in Celtics heart and soul, right? He'll be a new player. But you're saying that... And we already established, at least in my mind, that Jason Tatum, I don't know what, does he know what team he's playing for?
Kobe Bryant.
He's playing for Kobe Bryant. He's on the Kobe Bryant sock puppet team. But you're saying that Jaylen Brown would be the person to then bring in and retain that sort of lineage of this core that's been to, you know, been to the finals now.
I mean, Al Horford was, to me, the second best player. Like I said all along, I think Robert Williams is the best player. And I think Jaylen Brown and Al Horford, you can talk amongst yourselves who's the second or third best player. But, I mean, if Al Horford's playing how he's playing, he was an amazing pickup, trade deadline pickup. He can continue being that veteran heart and soul for this team. Like, he's just as important to me in that locker room as Marcus Smart is. Robert Williams isn't going anywhere for sure if he can heal up his knee. Like, to me, Jaylen Brown, and it's been the case for most of his career in the Celtics, has been a trade candidate because he's good enough to get a superstar, basically. If you chuck in Jaylen Brown, you chuck in, I don't know, Derek White, a Grant Williams, a couple first-round picks. Who was the name that was floating around for Anthony Davis? It was Jaylen Brown. Like, Jaylen Brown was the key to any deal that the Celtics would make trade away. I'm not saying Anthony Davis is worth it, but if there was another superstar that was in the mix, maybe that's a better fit. Maybe someone that feels like he doesn't deserve to be the, you know, the shadow to Jason Tatum. He thinks he's better than Jason Tatum. I don't know, like...
He definitely thinks he's better than Jason Tatum.
Of course, and he proved... I mean, the finals, he definitely was better than Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum was the worst starter for the Celtics. So if Brown really has this ego, where he's like, no way am I playing second fiddle to Tatum, I could see him kind of, like, you know, low-key force a trade kind of thing.
I'm not sure he'll force a trade, just because now, like, this has been a core group for a few years now, and they've gone through a lot together. So I'm talking about Tatum, Smart, and Jaylen Brown. So it'd be a hard reset if they traded one of those players.
I mean, it's still a good nucleus. Even if you swap out Chris Paul for Marcus Smart, like that's a pretty good team. Brown, Tatum, Paul, and then you got Al Horford and Robert Williams. Like, that's as good as you can get in the NBA, basically. You look at the roster, you don't have one single true point guard on the team, except Peyton Pritchard, but only because of his height. The way he plays is more shooting guard than anything.
Wow, I'm not sure they'll do it, though. I don't see them doing that move. I don't dislike that move. I think that's really interesting, for sure.
The cap situation is sweet. They're not paying any of these guys to supermax. You know, Jason Tatum doesn't get it. Jaylen Brown's not even getting, like, he didn't even get the max, Jaylen Brown.
Oh, poor
that's
guy.
How cheap Jesus the Celtics Christ. Are. Marcus Smart obviously didn't get the max. Robert Williams, injury history, didn't get anywhere close to the max. Like, this team is, I mean, either lucky or they're allergic to giving out maxes. So they're very good position financially. I mean, they're lucky too. If Jason Tatum made an All-NBA team, they would have had to pay him the Supermax, but he didn't. So, you know, here's where we are. We're giving you less money.
Tell me this then. What's the Celtics' future outlook? It sounds like you're kind of optimistic because you feel like they can bring in, there are options for them to bring in.
I'm not optimistic. Like, I think ultimately they're going to fail because it's so hard to take that next step. And I know they got to the finals and you say, oh, if they won game four, like, this is it. Like, the Celtics will have won. But that's what it takes sometimes. Like, it's so freaking hard to get back to this spot. And I think they got to make radical moves. They got to be brave. They can't just stay pat. Because I look at a team like Thunder where they lose in five and it's like, hey, don't worry. You got 22-year-old Kevin Durant. You got 21-year-old Russell Westbrook. You got 22-year-old James Harden. You're set. This team just made the finals against LeBron.
Three future MVPs.
Exactly. And they had three future MVPs. And
Serge Ibaka.
And if they stay together, who knows? And Serge Ibaka and... I mean, they had Kendrick Perkins too. Like, that was like the old school, starting five, but they were just so dominant that they could dominate in today's league, obviously. They probably still would be dominating if they didn't have egos that got in the way. But I look at that and I think that, like, look, it's all nice and good. Like, you're young, you think you got lots of runs to go, but these things don't come easy, you know? Unless you're Steph Curry or LeBron James, like, you can't just force your way to the finals. It's not that easy.
I do agree with you that the future is not guaranteed. And I think, you know, one trip to the finals doesn't mean anything. For all I know, this team might miss the playoffs or get bounced in the first round next year.
I mean, they did get bounced in the first round like last year.
On Tatum, I'll end by saying, you know, it sounds like I've been down on Tatum, but he's a young player and we'll see how he develops. Because there's one thing we took away from the Nets series is that it really highlighted sort of the ascension of Tatum because he was better in that series. And
yeah, at his peak.
Tatum wasn't able to sustain that, obviously, into the finals. Maybe that's something that can be worked on. Maybe, you know, he can build that. And surrounded with the right team, the right sort of culture, he can still take, there's more levels to go. Actually, there definitely is more levels for him to go. And, you know, on my sort of comments about his leadership and his demeanor, I think it's okay not to have that. You don't have to be the vocal leader. I think we look at Kawhi Leonard as the best example of that. Not saying that Tatum is Kawhi Leonard, but, you know, Kawhi Leonard, he is able to win the championship, win the finals MVP in Toronto because Toronto had all the other cultural players on that team already. Where you don't need Kawhi to be that. You just need a Kawhi, be the fun guy, and to score.
I'm just saying, like, sometimes it's also, like, addition by subtraction. And, like, in that Raptors example, okay. The best... What? What's wrong?
addition by subtraction? Who's the player they subtracted? May I ask?
Oh, I'm getting to that, if you don't interrupt me. I'm just saying sometimes the best asset to your team is getting rid of the problem. It's not like just adding extra players. Okay. I'll leave it at that.
Oh. You're talking about DeMar DeRozan. Statue, Toronto Stop statue.
Stop screaming at me.
I'm sorry. They need a statue for DeMar. Okay. All right. Let's talk about the Warriors.
My man, Kenny Atkinson, is an NBA champion, baby. He's going to be a legend. A future head coach. Look, this Warriors, like, we just hope at the offseason for the future for the Celtics. This future for the Warriors is actually way more interesting. And it starts with their coaches, their assistant coaches. Steve Kerr isn't going anywhere. He's like already, you know, what do you call it?
He's been franchised.
He's like one of the best coaches of all time, sort of cemented himself. But Mike Brown.
Oh, don't rate him.
Okay. I mean, we can make fun of him. But anyway, he's going. He's gone. He's gone to Sacramento.
The Lakers are probably still paying him.
Kenny Atkinson. He's going to coach my boy LaMelo in Charlotte. I like that. I like that pairing. So already, like, the assistant coaching is kind of decimated. And Mike Brown and Kenny Atkinson, even before they got the, you know, new head coaching jobs, they were head coaches before. So this was a pretty stacked coaching staff, you know, around Steve Kerr. It was a pretty strong coaching staff. And yeah, also me, like, hearing some of the stories about what Mike Brown did for this coaching staff wasn't, like, small. When Steve Kerr was out, Mike Brown was elevated to that interim head coaching job. And he devised, like, a lot of plays that were, like, super heavy on Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. Basically, feed the ball to your stars. You got the star players, just feed the ball to the stars.
Okay.
And I just thought that was...
I could have coached that team.
Well...
Didn't Luke Walton coach to all-time, like, winning streak?
Well, that was pre-KD, but yeah, he had a pretty good streak.
Let's just calm down a little bit on Mike Brown, okay?
Okay. Okay, anyway, I just wanted to mention that up top. Kenny Atkinson, deserved champion.
Respect.
He was a scapegoat in Brooklyn, unfortunately. And I'm glad that he landed on his feet in Golden State and became champion. Another name, we can get to Steph Curry, obviously. He was by far the best player. But I'm so... Watching Gary Payton... I think he's up for, I think he needs extension. I think he needs a new salary. I think this was his last year. I hope he gets paid. I don't really care what happens to every other player, to be honest. Like, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green. Like, they need to get extensions if they want to get paid. You know, like, let's see what happens. They need to get traded. Let's see what happens. But I just feel the Golden State Warriors need to keep Gary Payton. Like, I just feel like his story is so inspirational. He was meant to take him on a video coordinator coaching role before the coach was like, no, you're playing for us. And he battled, he was undrafted, he battled in the G League, got his chance. And then finally, when he got his chance, he made every single play, got injured, in the playoffs, came back in game two and made an immediate impact, won game two, for the Warriors, as far as I'm concerned. I just think, and it was, to me, the best perimeter player. Like, maybe Marcus Smart still, but so controversial with the way he's flopping all the time. It just takes it out.
Do we actually know who on the Warriors sort of, like, gave him that chance, that rated him?
Must have been one of the assistant coaches that just saw him. Yeah.
The reason I say that, it's not just a cute story. It's like, oh, this guy was applying for, like, a coordinator job. Yeah. And then he got upgraded to a player. Because don't forget, anyone could have had this player, right? In other words, he applied to a video coordinator job because no one in the NBA wanted him or rated him or saw anything in him to give him that chance. And the reason I ask who gave him that, because recently, I think I mentioned to you, I listened to a Mike D'Antoni interview. And Kenny Atkinson, as well as Mike's brother, who was an assistant coach on the Knicks, they were the ones that pushed for Jeremy Lin. And they were saying, play Jeremy the week before that Jeremy would have been released by the Knicks. And Mike's like, I don't know. Like, I don't see it. Why? Like, why? This guy's going to be gone, like, next week. And they were pushing for Jeremy because they were helping him during workouts. And, you know, it was really good of Mike saying, like, I can't necessarily take credit for it. I didn't discover Jeremy Lin. It was the assistant coaches.
It was Kenny.
It was Kenny Atkinson and his brother, right?
Mm.
Reading between lines, he was basically saying, if it was not them insisting on playing Jeremy, he wouldn't have played Jeremy.
Mm. We wouldn't have had the insanity. I mean, you can reserve, like, who gives credit. I'm not saying we should rob Steve Kerr of credit, you know, for playing Gary Payton, because you know, they last season they played James Wiseman, they played Juan Toscano-Anderson a lot. You know, they had like a lot of players that were playing in place of injured Steph Curry, injured Klay Thompson. Draymond Green was in and out. Like I don't even remember how many games Draymond Green played last season. They had a lot of like weird players like taking up the starter roles. And it's only now that, you know, getting Andrew Wiggins, getting Klay Thompson back to full health, getting a full season of Draymond Green, Steph Curry, obviously, you know, supersonic. But it's only from now that we're starting to see like the Warriors DNA come through. You know what I mean? Like the actual Warriors DNA come through. And who are the best players to be paired with their core group of, you know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond. And Gary Payne just shone so brightly.
I couldn't agree with you more. And this guy's a worker. And it's actually incredible the fact that...
And the fact that his father, you know, is a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
And normally, like, when that happens, it's like, I don't have to prove anything. I've grew up in, like, privilege. And this guy's a fucking worker. He applied for a video coordinator job.
I love that.
That tells me humbleness. That's not... He didn't have to be a video coordinator for anything.
He doesn't have to, yeah. He doesn't have to work.
And the fact that he showed up in playoffs, getting injured in that, was that Memphis series? Broke his elbow. Memphis,
yeah, broke his elbow. Maybe a bit.
And then coming back, I mean, this guy, love him.
And played well too.
He got like 3 steals on in the final game.
That game 6, that dunk when on the fast break, he just like off 2 feet, just like
love it.
Just tomahawk dunk on from the ground. Like I was like, it just blew me away. I wasn't expecting him to just dunk it. He could have just done a simple layup. Would have sufficed. Got the 2 points. He fucking threw it like Blake Griffin style. He's like 6'3" as well. I didn't know he had like. I knew he had the hops, but I was just like blown away. Like
Klay Thompson's like 6 inches taller and is getting like rejected by the rim in China.
Oh God. Oh. Should we?
Okay.
Maybe we can do one good, one bad. I think Klay Thompson definitely deserves to be in the bad category. Can we trade him? Can they trade him?
No, I think we need to give Klay more time. Look, Klay was terrible in the last game.
Oh, God. But
he did hit some key shots.
5 for 18 or something like that.
There was a point where I was texting you. It's like Klay trying to extend the series so he can get another stab at Finals MVP. Like, what's happening? He's taking 20 shots. But saying that he's coming back from injury, he hadn't played in like 900 days or something like crazy like that. We need to give him a bit more time. And I think secondly, he did a great job defensively against Brown and Tatum. He was really locking them up and giving them a really hard time. So I think Klay is still super valuable. You definitely cannot trade Klay. I think the question, like you said, it's more around who should we be surrounding? Who should we build around our core? Is it Gary Payton Jr. or 2? I say definitely. I think, you know, is it Kevon Looney? Is he a keeper? I say definitely. Is it Poole? I say maybe, maybe not. I'd be definitely okay with trading Poole.
The names that are up for, I'm just bringing up now, the names that are up for extension. Andrew Wiggins, obviously, he's got 1 more year left in his contract. Draymond Green could go for an extension because he's got one more guaranteed year, and then I think it's a play option. And then you got Jordan Poole, obviously, which we just mentioned. He's he was eligible for an extension this season, and he's into his last year, his rookie contract next season. So he would be up for extension too.
That's the key one, right? Because Draymond, he's obviously going to extend. Yeah, Jordan Poole. Draymond's obviously going to extend. They're definitely going to extend Andrew Wiggins, but Jordan Poole is the one that we don't know about.
Well, Andrew Wiggins might be taking on the max, though. But we're not paying Jordan Poole the max.
Well, there was talk that Jordan Poole would be up for a max extension with someone. Andrew Wiggins, after winning a chip, I don't see any way that Andrew Wiggins will be off of this team. I think he'd be willing to take a discount, if need be, to stay with the Warriors. Because, well, I mean, what has Andrew Wiggins done off the Warriors, right? Nothing. So the only reason he's successful is being on the Warriors. And I think he's been around long enough to recognize this for sure. He's like laughing stock of the league before.
He'll still get paid pretty well.
Right. So he can do, well, he was getting paid in Minnesota. Did he have fun in Minnesota? How do you like that?
Yeah. So yeah, might take a bit less than the max.
I think he'll take a little bit less if need be. I'm not saying he will be getting less than the max, but I think Jordan Poole is the key question because I think he's the one that is, in my mind, expendable. You know, he's certainly valuable in the regular season. I think in the playoffs and the finals, he's a bit give or take. I mean, there's, you know, there are games and we were texting each other like, is this a mid-level exception player? I mean, what's he doing? Stop shooting, please. Defensively, he's a liability as well.
It's a bit, yeah, defensively challenged. But I mean, game six, he had some big shots, you know? Game five, he had some big shots too.
For sure. Or maybe we don't actually have to worry because if anything, maybe he showed us in the playoff that he can't be the number one go-to on a team, in which case other teams aren't going to offer him a max contract.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's still got one more year. Maybe they just like trade and like sign and trade kind of thing like that. Like they have no intention of keeping Jordan Poole, so they just trade him to get some value out of him, just like they did with Kevin Durant with D'Lo. You know, look what happened to that D'Lo turned into Andrew Wiggins, and you know that was considered a bad contract when Andrew Wiggins came in. He was on the max. He was like, you know, he was owed the max money still. And now it's one of the better deals on the team. Like, look at what Klay Thompson and Draymond Green's getting paid, and look and relate that to their impact on the team. Andrew Wiggins is the second best player. He's only getting paid like $30 million. That's a huge bargain compared to what Klay Thompson's getting paid next season, which is like $40 million and potentially declining. But actually, like, listen to the names that are up for like a new contract. Like, they're actually don't have a contract going next season. Kevon Looney, Iguodala, Porter, Bielitsa, and Gary Payton. That's kind of the key names. Iguodala might retire, so we don't have to count him. But Porter, Payton, Looney, to me, are like the kind of three main players like they have to think about kind of hard if they want to resign them or not.
So I listen to that list and I say no problem. I think all those players are winners and they've now experienced winning.
But they're not accepting the minimum, any of them. Maybe Payton if he's that like dedicated to the Warriors, but
I don't think they're going to get the minimum. They'll get more than the minimum, but you know, I'm not worried that they're not also asking for a massive contract. I don't think. I mean, Porter's been paid already. Didn't Washington give him a max at some point?
Yeah, yeah, but now he's finished, so he's not obviously getting a max anymore, but he's not going to get a minimum, I feel.
No, he's not getting a minimum, but I'm saying, you know, Warriors are willing to play. I think they're going to be paying like $400 million in salary, luxury tax.
Yeah, I mean, if they're willing to, yeah, fork out the tax bill, yeah.
I don't see any problem. I think Looney, he's there to stay for sure. Mm. Steve Kerr loved him. Mm. He's loved him for years.
Well, Looney was a better center than Green. For most of the postseason.
He was pulling down so many offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. Without Looney, he couldn't play small at all.
Mm.
So I think he's critical. And Gary Payton Jr., the second, I think he definitely deserves more money. He'll get more money on the Warriors. And, you know, I think that's where he can extract the most value from on the Warriors. By being successful on a Warriors rather than, I don't know, landing in Sacramento and then becoming an obscure player.
Mm. Like, they got some good depth, but at the same time, they got young guys like maybe Kuminga is untradeable. Like, maybe we just say Kuminga is untouchable because of his potential. Like, what we've seen on the floor so far is that he's got star potential. But Wiseman, like, you know, do we cut our losses at this point and say, look, this guy has potential for your team, but not for us. Like, not for where we're going right now. And based on his salary, he's basically worth double than what he's worth right now because he's getting paid like $9 million in his rookie contract. But, you know, because of the punitive luxury tax, he actually is costing the Warriors like 18 to 20 mil, something like that. Moses Moody, you know, is another young player that maybe they could throw into a trade offer. Jordan Poole, obviously, like we said, maybe he's a sweetener on any deal to kind of bring on that next player. Because to me, Steph Curry and Andrew Wiggins had a, you know, amazing postseason run. But is that enough to continue to fuel your future to actually make this a legit dynasty? Like, I really think this is a mini dynasty as it is. Four championships, 8 finals or something like that. They want to be considered like all-time great franchises that dominated an entire decade, like what the Celtics, what the Lakers did, what the Bulls did. I think that's, you know, they're kind of like a championship short sort of thing. Like that's where they're kind of getting close to. And with Steph Curry on the contract for a number of years, I think that's no problem. They're going to continue to compete, but they have to do, they have to do something like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, because those guys are huge declining assets, in my opinion. And they got young guys that can support any trade that they want to make. If they want to get, I don't know, more offensive, to get a Bradley Beal, go defensive, get a Marcus Smart, maybe, you know, like I don't know what the deal is, but something's out there, and they got the kind of the assets to fund any deal that they want to make.
I don't think Draymond Green or Klay Thompson is going anywhere. I think both of those players will be willing to take less money to stay with the Warriors.
Well, they're still getting paid a lot of money, and by the time the contract runs out, they should retire, basically.
And that's what they'll do. Then they'll retire as Warriors, moving off into mid-level exception, moving off into minimum contracts. But those are Warriors for life for sure. So I don't think you need to worry about that. I think you're overpaying, but you're basically overpaying because you won 4 championships with these players.
That's fine, but they still need to compete for championships. That's what the payroll is for. I'm not saying they shed any of these contracts, get rid of Klay Thompson because they're too expensive. I'm saying they need to be competitive.
Right.
I agree. There's an angle.
You need to convert them.
You need to convert them because I agree with you. Yes, you can be very sentimental and say like they're Warriors for life. And even if they got traded, what is Pippen a Blazer and a Bull? No. You think about Pippen as a Bull. That's it. Like that is it. Period. Okay. I don't care about late career Pippen. Right. Like. I think about Klay Thompson, he's always going to be a Warrior. He's drafted in Green. They were drafted as Warriors. They're going to end up as Warriors, like point blank, period. But this is about talking about Steph Curry and extending his, era into all-time greatness. Because right now, to me, I don't want to be blasphemous here, but I don't know. I'm talking about Steph Curry. Like I think about LeBron James, you know.
Oh, okay. You calm down. Jesus Christ. let's calm down, would you?
Okay. Well, same number of championships. So.
I've been having some private conversations with the Warriors organization.
All right.
And I'm not sure how much of this I can share, but.
Well, I'm your partner, so you should tell me.
That's true. Let me just tell you then. Bob Myers, first of all, told me that Kevin Durant, more important than a great player, is he's a wonderful human being.
Yeah, we knew that already.
By the way, maybe we save this for offseason. Isn't it strange that a lot of these like GMs or front office staff, they keep talking about these players feeling the need to mention that they're great human beings, that they're like better human beings first than players? Like, why isn't that strange?
I don't know.
You know, you've got a job, right? You have annual performance reviews and all that. Do any of your performance reviews say like Kane performed really well? He hit his like targets. More important than that, he's a great human being.
Yeah, sounds about right.
That seems right. That's what you get. That's what you get on your reviews.
Nah, probably.
Okay, anyway.
You're probably just not used to that because you're an awful human.
Oh, okay. He's like awful. Great work, Dave, but terrible person.
terrible person. Pain in the ass to work with, but gets the job done.
Lots of HR complaints. No, look, Bob Myers has told me, basically, to replenish the next generation, they're looking at Kuminga, okay? And converting assets, they're looking to Wiseman and they're looking at Jordan Poole. the Warriors' DNA of Klay, of Draymond, they're not going to trade them. Those are fixed assets. And
fixed payments too.
They've got Kuminga, and he's definitely showing a lot of potential. So potentially he extends that Warriors dynasty and that run.
Yeah, I mean, the best lineup was Curry, Payton, Klay, unfortunately. Porter and Wiggins. Oh, no, not Klay. Steph, Payton, Wiggins, Porter, and, you know, you can throw in Green or Looney. I like Looney better than Green. But anyway, Green's okay because he can do some playmaking. But you can probably swap out Kuminga for Porter. But Porter's was a really good three-point shooter. Kuminga can kind of do it all for you. Not as good as three-point shooting, but can, you know, take on the floor, can drive, can play a lot of defense. So if Wiggins gets extended, and Kuminga is obviously on his rookie deal, Wiggins, Kuminga, Curry, Thompson, and Green? Yeah. It could be.
Very good. Very good.
It's very good. It's a good defensive team. Yeah, I could see it. But look, you're forgetting the most important thing here. And that is Klay is horrible. Klay was horrible. He can't. Once you can't don't have the lift to shoot threes, it's over. You can't even get the proper lift. I mean, he never had lift to begin with, but the fact that he has even less lift when he couldn't even get lifted in the first place.
I mean, I've seen the China tapes, okay? Let's just say, not good. Not good.
I mean, he has like the flattest shot, like you saw in game six, like every shot was like hitting hard off the side of the ring, like flying out, like back to the other side of the court.
I'm not so worried about Klay, because what Bob Myers told me, and I'm sharing with you just because, you know, you are my partner here. This is...
No one listens to this show.
I've been asked, this is like, to keep this on the down low. But Bob's not that worried about Klay. Klay's returning to basketball after some 900 days of rehab. Multiple years of rehab. That's almost three years of rehab.
Yeah.
He's not worried about that. Secondly, Klay's next contract is not going to be a max contract. And there's just the same possibility that Klay will regain a lot of the old Klay form. I'm not saying he's going to surpass or even reach old Klay, but I'm saying we saw in the playoffs that defensively, he's still got the smarts. Now, physically, he needs to probably work on that so that he can be more consistent on defense. But in the high leverage moments, we saw that he was locking down Jaylen Brown. He was definitely locking down Jaylen Brown, right?
I mean, was he? I mean, Jaylen Brown hit a lot of shots.
I saw it, okay? Secondly, on the shooting, I agree. The shooting is looking bad right now, but I think it can improve. And more importantly, you know, we're not the only ones watching the NBA playoffs. Other teams are looking at this as well. And this idea that the Warriors should get off Klay and somehow some other team is going to give them, like, you know, pay $1.20 for a dollar is, I think, wishful thinking.
Yeah, that's
good. Klay has probably more value on Golden State than on some other team.
I mean, he is a champion and he is expensive though. So yes, I agree that no team is going to be paying $1.20 for Klay Thompson. Like, honestly, for me, I would take the 50 cents on Klay Thompson right now. I don't think he's worth $80 million over the next two seasons.
But what are you getting for that? Like, you floated the name Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal. First of all, Bradley Beal needs to get a vaccination, okay? Secondly, Bradley Beal is a well-known perennial loser who can't get out of the first round, has done nothing. Best buddies with Jason Tatum, okay? That's all I need to say. Jason Tatum. Please.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is it's not happening in like a month's time. Like, oh, thanks for winning us a championship, Klay. Okay, see ya. Like, it's not going to happen like in the next couple of months. This is something that is going to be ongoing. It's something that you, like you said, Lacob, Bob, two, I'm on a first name basis with those guys as well. are going to be monitoring the trade market, the situation with other superstars, seeing if they want to make, you know, if they're desperate or forcing a trade with their respective teams. And then maybe they call the Warriors, hey, look, my superstar's unhappy. You give me Clay, you give me a bunch of picks, I'll give you a Damian Lillard. I'll give you a Bradley Beal. I'll give you...
Stop right there. Dame Lillard, I like that. I like that. That I like.
Now, I'm not saying... Okay, now this is obviously trading up. Like, this is like $2 on the dollar. But what I'm saying is you package Clay. You make the salaries work with Clay, with Kuminga, with Wiseman, with Moody, with a couple of first-round picks. Now you're fucking cooking with, you know, with rocket fuel, right? Now you're getting somewhere where Curry, in his second career, basically, where he's graduating into more of a, I don't know, like a veteran point guard with extremely good shooting still. Now he can rely on a proper... Because for a long time, it was Curry and Thompson, right? They were the two offensive juggernauts on this team. Thompson can't do that anymore. Now he has to retire more defensively. He needs to focus on the defensive end because he's not the same player as offensively. So now you're relying on Wiggins and maybe Kuminga to give you some offensive output, or Jordan Poole to give you some more. But look, none of those players can give you what Klay Thompson was doing in his prime. And unfortunately to me, Klay's out of his prime. So what do? You wait on the market. You got these contracts on offer. After the season, Klay Thompson's an expiring contract. That's going to be very desirable to a team, you know, looking to shake things up. Maybe the superstars aren't happy. Golden State Warriors are maybe going to, you know, mortgage the future a little bit with some future first-round picks. Maybe that looks a little bit more interesting. You get a champion, you get a few more young players, you get some draft picks. Maybe you're willing to part. You know, so that's all I'm saying is, like, I'm not saying, like, oh, Klay Thompson's going to leave tomorrow, Draymond Green's going to leave tomorrow. All I'm saying is, like, it seems like the Warriors are primed with the right recipe of assets and flexibility to make moves to continue to, you know, ensure that Steph Curry wins more championships. Because, I think this team, like I said, even Kuminga replaces Porter, they're probably good enough to win the championship again. But, you know, how sure do you want to be? Like, how much do you want to bet on Steph Curry continuing to being this supernova for the next 5 seasons? You know, these are all questions that the Warriors management have to ask. And, you know, when the right opportunity comes, are they willing to part with their franchise darlings, the core players that got them here? Are they willing to make the business decisions necessary to continue to propped Curry's career even further, where now we're saying, look, Curry's got 6 championships. Jordan's got 6 championships. LeBron's got 4.
I see what you're saying. I would suspect the answer is yes. And I think we just have to look at Iguodala to get a sense of that. In other words, it's possible that they could let Draymond go and Klay go.
Yeah, and they might come back.
If someone else wants to have their expiring contract, and then afterwards they can always come back onto the Warriors. Maybe that's a checkmate type of move. Imagine that.
They could have your cake and eat it too sort of situation.
Exactly, and that's what Iguodala did. Iguodala's like, fuck, I'm not playing with any other team.
Went to the Grizzlies, didn't he?
He went to Grizzlies, he went on the Heat, and then eventually he wins a chip on the Warriors again.
His 4th chip again, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell already, like, Iguodala, he's going to be in San Fran. He's going to be, like, assistant coach there or something.
He's either going to retire or do a Haslam role where he's getting paid, like, $500,000 just to be on the bench.
Yeah, exactly, and that's great value. No
problem with that. Look, I think it was overall a pretty disappointing postseason, capped off with a pretty exciting finals. I kind of wish it went to Game 7 because... You know, no finals is really historic unless it gets to Game 7, right? Like, that's when it becomes historic. Having said that, Boston just continued to shrink. And I think that's really what it's going to come down to at the end of the day. Like, Curry was amazing, but I don't think he was more amazing than how bad Boston played in the finals. I think there's going to be some soul-searching in Boston because they were so high on the team. There was so much... encouragement based on how they got there, the teams they beat to get there. They thought, I think a lot of people thought they would beat the Warriors pretty easily. And after game one, it was like, okay, it's going to be like five-gamer. They were favored. So I think this was a win for Steph Curry, as in like he really willed this team. We always go back to the Celtics again. I kind of look at this roster. I'm like, man, there's so much talent and so much disappointment. Like they could have done so much better, but
I don't know.
Where do you start? Like, honestly, like I know we talked about it for like 30 minutes. It's just never ending because I'm just constantly thinking like, this team is so talented and they just have so little to show in the six games. But you can't say the Warriors are a better team than the Celtics.
No, I'm not saying they're the better team, but like, I don't know, maybe I am. Because like, I don't know, the Celtics could have lost to Milwaukee for I know. They should have lost to Milwaukee if Milwaukee had Middleton.
Yeah, but they didn't.
Respect, right? Jason Tatum, I think the closeout game, he scored like 40-something points.
Yeah, exactly.
But against the Heat, I mean, Jesus, they're like trying to hand the series to the Heat multiple times.
Yeah, that's all fair.
Overall, my feeling is it's all on Tatum, right? Because it feels like I've been so down on Tatum. But at the same time, it's like this team will go as far as Tatum improves. If Tatum can take the next level, then this team is going to the next level, and that's it.
Yeah.
And if Tatum, still retains his like current sort of so much potential kind of play, then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they get bounced in the first round.
Mm.
It's the end of another NBA season. It was a stressful playoff run for both Kane and myself. To be honest, didn't care much for the Warriors or the Celtics. Kane's team, of course, got bounced in the first round after four games.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James, obviously.
Did your team even make the playoffs?
No, they did not make the playoffs. Were the Bulls in the playoffs? I don't even know.
The Bulls, yeah, they were in the playoffs. I think so. They got beat by the Sixers or something?
Okay.
Can't remember.
My lover, DeMar, I didn't even get a chance to watch him before he got bounced in the playoffs. So it's been a trying playoffs.
Oh, they got beat by the Bucks. Yeah, that's right.
I want to congratulate Kane for again winning our playoff prediction bracket. This is probably the third time in a row now that he's won. I have to say, it makes me sometimes question my basketball knowledge and IQ.
I guess the finals completely correct. I don't know if that was overshadowed by any other takes, but yeah, I was spot on. Warriors in six. That's why I guess.
Okay, you took. Okay, we need to.
I never doubted my prediction in a second.
Maybe I should. I need to share some of my text after game one.
No, those are.
It's going to be the off season, so we'll be checking in as needed with new developments. Certainly, after many months of basketball and talking about the playoffs, it's now probably time for us to get back to what this show is all about, which is talking about the Brooklyn Nets. The blackout period is lifted, okay? And we'll be talking about where Kyrie Irving is going to be playing next.
All right.
Okay, because that's what I want to know. That's where I want to know.
There's a draft. There's a draft next week, so you know that's something to look forward to.
Right. If you have any questions about our show, about where the whereabouts of Larry O'Brien, let us know. Tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.
We're not saying we having him hostage, but we know his whereabouts. So
yeah, send your comments to Kobe Bryant's Twitter account or email, wherever Jason Tatum is sending it to. Look, Jason, I know you've been sending a lot of texts, not getting any replies from that Kobe account. I promise you, if you message us, we'll reply to you. I'll reply to you personally.
Well, what's the handle? What's the account?
At Your NBA Podcast.
We'll send it to we'll relay it to Kobe. We'll relay you.
Well, I'll personally relay it to Kobe. Thank you. Stop laughing. Be respectful, please. Thank you.
That's the Larry Bird MVP winner you're slagging off there.
Lisa Torres on the beat, boys.
Thank you for listening to Your MBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your MBA Podcast.